What it is. It's your boy, Big Talk in the building. Nice to introduce myself. Nice to be here. I'd like to get it going by letting y'all know that today, starting today, we gonna start having the Fly Report featuring Big Mood. So get ready, prepare yourself for the Fly Report. And then we're going to go on to Capital E and Mr. Baca. Now on to the show.
Big Mood.
Yo.
What up, Big Mood? What up with you, bro?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Chilling, man. Yo, I'm already tell you right now, I'm a little faded. I've been puffing upon the ganja, but what's up with you, bro? What's going on with you? How are things?
Things are good, man. I mean, you know, things are going as well as one could possibly hope, you know?
That's right. And, folks, we got Big Mood on the line. That, yo, this dude right here knows everything when it comes to like the fashion trends, latest shoes, hats, accessories, events coming up. This dude is like the fucking entertainment guru of LA, right?
Well, I wouldn't say all that, but I like to be plugged in.
Right. That's the man who's plugged in is gonna say, right? But yeah, it's my man right here. So we're gonna start having the Fly Report coming to y'all, you know, periodically just dropping jewels and letting y'all know what's what, where it is, how to get it, and how to rock it. You know what I mean? So, my man. Big Mo. So, tell them what's up, man. What's the latest and greatest out there?
You know, everybody's getting geared up for the new fall season. You know, Supreme just dropped that Lacoste collabo.
Right.
It's nice. It's real nice. It's got a lot of, you know, 80s, 90s feels like everybody's doing right about now.
All right.
That, you know, that's what everybody's on, especially Supreme.
Yeah.
But then they're going back to like a lot of like the bright, like that 90s, like unnecessary sports shit.
Yeah.
You know, like the jerseys and for like random ass sports and bright ass colors and goggles for no damn reason.
Right. Yeah, I remember that era, bro. Yeah. That shit was funny.
Just picture red and meth.
Yeah, like 94,
95.
Yeah, 96. Hell yeah. Real shit. Motherfuckers with the, everybody had the the videos blowing in their face, and Hype Williams is doing everybody's videos.
That fisheye lens. Everybody had that fisheye camera always on the floor for some damn reason.
Hell yeah. Everybody had the fisheye lens, the wind blowing, and like in a little room. Like a little a corner.
Like a hallway with a lot of lights.
Real shit.
Camera was always on the wrapping to the floor. I was pointing down at you.
Hell yeah. Like they're giants looking down at you like and moving like, what's up? Yeah, hell yeah. That shit was funny as shit. All right, so Supreme and Lacoste, huh?
I like a lot of the stuff they're doing. It's a lot of the workwear look, which is, you know, real big right now with all the shearling collars and the, you know, the coaches jackets and the workers jackets.
Those workers jackets are dope.
Work shirts and like skater pants, like utility pants. There's a lot of like old painters pants, all that shit. All that is like huge right now.
Hell yeah.
I said you can get the same he's even Ben Davis jacket, you know, for a quarter of the price, but it just doesn't have that little Supreme sticker.
Exactly.
Tiny little stitching. It says Supreme.
Yeah. Tiny little stitching says Supreme, exactly.
Fuck me about that fucking Hanes collabo. It was literally just a Hanes t-shirt. Not even like a quality, thick, like a good cut. Like, it was just a shitty Hanes t-shirt. The collar curls up and then they fall apart. They're thin and they got a terrible cut. Yet they just put Supreme on the inside and charge like $60 for a pack of three.
Damn. That's crazy. And no one knows.
I mean, and they sold. People sold.
Yeah, but no one, when you're rocking it, no one knows.
Yeah, of course. No. No, not at all.
Yeah, it's like, I just got this frame shit on, and I know it. It's crazy. But yeah, that's what's dope. All right, so, what else is cracking? What else is cracking?
Everybody loves Palace right now. You know, they got strong stuff, but again, you know, it's another high end skate label. Everything that Union has been dropping lately is like on point. Neighborhood, that Japanese streetwear.
Oh, right.
They just dropped something recently that's really, really good. Really, really dope. Capsule that just came out not too long ago. Let's see what else.
Double Dance.
All right. Thank you. stupid. All right. Double Dance. They've got a great drop recently that's got really everything that I was just talking about, all like the throwback. But they got a cool like back and forth with it. They've got a lot of like the workwear stuff, plaids, the work shirts and stuff. And like coaches jackets and bright colors and all that I was talking about, but they do it in a real unique way. Everything is different. There's a lot of like mixing of materials. There's a lot of unique cuts and silhouettes. It looks like everything that like we were talking about of that era, that style, but it's definitely different. It's newer for sure. They got a lot of like that, because Double Taps, they always, they got that military, you know, feel and look to them, and they're able to mix a lot of those looks together in a unique way that I'm really, really feeling. It's, if you look it up, it's just WTAPS, one of those brands, and you're like, how the hell do I say that? W-Taps, it's actually Double Taps.
And what is it now? How do you spell it?
W-T-A-P-S.
Oh, okay. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, if you try and type out Double Taps, you're not going to get shit.
Exactly.
And like I was mentioning prior, that neighborhood drop that came out recently is in that same vein, a lot of like nods to the 80s, 90s, you know, graphics and looks and colorways. But again, in like a new, you know, because Neighborhood, they've been one of my favorites for a really long time. Unnecessarily expensive again, but definitely like unique. Their shit's always just different. Like you'll see an Honor Oak or a windbreaker, but never the same way. Like they use like a different material, or just different cuts, or just extra pockets, or something that's just definitely different. But again, that same skater look with the military jackets and the plaids and the long sleeves and whatnot. But definitely a good capsule.
Nice. And they're out of Tokyo, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what's up. Man, that's what's up with the fashion now. I know you know what's up with that. So, tell me, you're in the LA area. You're out there in the streets. What's happening right now in the streets? What's like a trend that's popping right now that people don't know about?
Honestly, there's been a lot of emphasis on the skatewear look. The Dickies and the long sleeve shirts and beanies and whatnot.
Right.
But that's lending itself to transition into a lot of workwear stuff that's like really big. Like, you're going to see a lot of that this fall. Like, a lot of workwear stuff. Work shirts, work jackets. And then also, like, a little lean into the Western look. Like, not so much as, like, you know, cowboy boots and hats and such, but definitely, like, that Western-style shirt.
Oh, okay.
You know, with, like, the patches over the shoulders that kind of come down to the point, and then they have the snap buttons and all of that.
Right.
That is definitely, if you haven't seen it too much yet, but you're going to see a lot of it soon.
Okay, it's like floral print. It's like, you didn't see it at all.
Yeah, but not just, definitely those, but also the solid colors with the piping.
Oh, okay.
Much more toned down, more of like the denim and like a plaid and you know, more like the workwear color scheme. In that sort of a cut and look and fit.
Right. Okay. So less of the vibrant colors. Less of the vibrant colors.
Yeah.
Going more to muted.
Yeah. More the earth tone, like workwear shit.
Nice. I've been seeing a bunch of jumpsuits that are really dope, like Air Force.
Exactly. That's, you hit the nail on the head with the jumpsuits, because like I was saying, anything workwear is huge right now. I don't know exactly why, but I, you know, like I said, I think it's the origins of those 80s and 90s styles and why they're so trendy and popular, because you know those styles aren't, those have been around forever. It's just, you know, a look,
right?
You know, so it's going down a different path where, like, you're starting to see like tons of really high end labels are doing, you know, like I said, work jackets and shirts and stuff. It's just so crazy to me to see like a Gucci jumpsuit.
Right. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's like postmodernism has hit, you know, has hit the runway. You know, like, they're just, everyone is trying to be so super trendy, but like going back to old fashion and old cuts and old traditions.
Yeah. I mean, that's always, you know, that's the ebbs and flows of fashion. Like, it's always a different era that comes back around. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you're starting to see people rock like bell bottoms and boot cuts and stuff. I never thought I'd see that shit again.
Right? Yeah. You're right. I have been seeing boot cuts now. Yeah, that tripped me out. Like, what? We're going back that far.
And Von Dutch. Those hideous Von Dutch trucker hats.
Von Dutch. Wow.
I'm tired of seeing. There's a slew of these young, like, SoundCloud rappers that are, you know, tatted face to foot and dripping with diamonds left and right and wearing some hideous Von Dutch hat and Von Dutch jeans. I guess it's nostalgia? I don't know.
Yeah.
That look is always terrible.
My son went out looking for a Ed Hardy. Found an Ed Hardy jacket. I was like,
exactly. Exactly. That's my point. How old is he?
16.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my point. All these SoundCloud rappers are starting to wear the, not just shit from like the early, but the ugly shit.
Yeah. Because they don't know what it was really like. They just think that when they find something that's kind of that era, they figure that had to be the shit. Like, some of the stuff they're finding is like, no, that was the whack shit.
Well, you know what? It, even if it is, they're all trying to like find their own lane and carve their own niche to where, you know, that it's, you see, every, like, that's why you're starting to see all those dudes not starting, but have been wearing like you know, metal looking shirts and whatnot, and like spikes and plaid and, you know, like punk rock and heavy metal shit. But if you listen to their music, it's, you know, auto-tune,
yeah,
you know, lo-fi trap.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Yep. You've done a great job, man. Thank you for bringing us all this information to us. This is the first of many Fly Reports. My man, Big Mood has been bringing it. Man, this is the first of many episodes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He's going to be bringing a report to you on a monthly basis, and we're going to be sometimes even coming live via the spot, you know?
So. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we're going to try and do a little bit more of a recon on actual drops, when they're coming out beforehand, what to look out for before it comes out, any of the new or upcoming LA-based events,
yeah,
anything that's you know, around the hip-hop, art, fashion realm. We're going to let you know when that's coming up and how to get down.
Yep, that's what's up. Big Mood, everybody. Big hand of applause. Yes, definitely. And back at you on the next one. And at that time, he will let you know how to get a hold of him and where what yeah, that's all about. All right, man. Big Mood. Respect, bro. One love.
Man. Thanks for hitting me up, brother. It's good talking.
You too.
Peace. What up? What up? What's going on with you, bro?
Nothing. Just, you know, coopering from work. Chilling out.
That's right, man. He works like 7 days a week, man.
No, I was off yesterday, but I have to go in today. I was only supposed to do like a half day, but it turned into like a full day. So... just dealing with that.
That's all right. It's all right.
Yeah. I need a vacation, basically.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, hey, do you know if Tyson Ranch is open yet?
Ranch?
Yeah. Mike Tyson's little weed getaway.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, I don't know if it's open yet. I know he was doing his...
I might need to book a weekend out there or something.
I know he was ramping up today. He was doing some like concerts with different people, different entities. He did a concert with like a power company and some other stuff he was doing out here.
I think it was like more of it was a festival. I knew he had like a festival. I'm pretty sure it was concerts, but it was a festival he was doing too.
Right, right. Festivals. That's right, right, right. But yeah, which was very interesting. I thought that was a kind of a interesting way for him to get into that. But hey, you heard about the UFO sightings that the military has declassified?
Nah. Wait, from what year was the sighting from, though? It had to be like a long time ago. Just declassified it.
2 years ago. It's like from 2 years ago.
Oh, no kidding. Nah, I haven't heard about that.
Yeah, just look it up. It's declassified and stuff. But I think it's drones, I think. Okay. But they're going like hell fast.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. Like, well, how detailed is it?
Oh, it's pretty detailed. It's pretty detailed. But, I mean, nowadays it's just UFO sightings because, I mean, they're with people, the drone capabilities now are insane. So.
Well, that, you know, and it's just like all the secret technology every government has, you know what I'm saying, under wraps. Like, you know, we know the United States got stuff under wraps, and then Russia, just like every major government power probably has some kind of secret tech.
Right.
Some of the stuff that the Nazis was working on was like, even to this day, it was still kind of considered like futuristic.
Edge. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Germans too. The Germans were doing a lot of crazy stuff that they had all types of like mine sweepers and different types of equipment that they had come up with. I don't know how much they used it in the field, but they had a lot of it.
Yeah, I had there is this documentary. I forgot the name of it. I used to have it on, I don't know if you remember me telling you about it, like a hard drive that wiped out unnecessarily. But at this documentary, it was talking about how I think it was like World War II caused Germany to, like, the effect it had on their design style, how they became so efficient and great at engineering. Because their stuff is engineered, like, way different. Because we got a couple of Germans to work where I'm at, and just the way they describe Germany, because we work on trains, on light rail vehicles. So, like, the process we go through out here as compared to Germany and where they engineer their trains is, like, way different. Even with, like my Audi, that was the first German car I had. But even compared to, like, a BMW or a Mercedes, it's just, like, it's a different animal, man. It's a different beast, the way they approach things. And, like, I can't remember the name of the designer's name, but I think it was basically the guy that Steve Jobs, he emulated when he was designing Apple products. And the guy was like, I think he was doing stuff like toasters and chairs and stuff like that. You know, this very IKEA kind of like stuff. It was very stylish, very practical, very useful, very minimalist. But it was like just their approach to design is just like very, it's very intelligent and very like useful. In a lot of ways, very minimalist. It's like deceivingly minimalist.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I was just talking about that today, minimalist styles, design styles and stuff, and this whole flat style that everybody's into right now.
Right.
But,
like with German vehicles, if you notice, like a lot of the knobs serve like double and triple duty. Like one knob might do three different things. Whereas in like an American car, you get like, nah, it's like one knob for every damn thing. Like I don't need a whole row of knobs unnecessarily. Yeah. But
yeah,
just something to look into if you ever get bored.
Yeah, sure. Well, what up, people? This is your man, Mr. Bach, in the building. Sitting here with Capital E. What up, Capital E?
What up?
Yeah, today's show is about a guy who, man, this guy's been chopping down, lyrics and putting out hits since the mid-90s, would you say?
I would say mid-90s, early 90s.
Mid-90s, 92,
99, Operation Doomsday came out. That was like the debut of MF Doom, but if you're talking about like the KMD days, then I think that goes back to his high school years.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess y'all know what we talk about. We talk about my man, MF Doom. Guy's a beast. Man, and, before he donned the mask and put that on, before that, he was in KMD, which was put out by Third Base.
Right.
So they were running behind Third Base, and, which crazy little side note on the Third Base thing. Did you hear about the whole Rakim, MC Search writing a verse for, supposedly writing a verse for Rakim?
No kidding. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so.
What verse? Apparently,
he made. Well, no, here's how it happened. All right, so Laura Sear had asked. I guess he heard that Search had written his verse or wrote a song rather, and told Rakim, "Hey, I heard Rakim. I heard that Search made this wrote a rhyme for you. You was having trouble writing or something." And he was like, "That's exactly how Rakim responded. Like, what?" He was like, "Nah." Nah. He said, no, MC Search said that. He was on some show. He said, yo, B, if MC Search said that, and that's my man, I will knock you the fuck out, bro. I will, really? Yo, Search, knock you the fuck out. that shit was hilarious, yo, bro. But he was on Vlad. But and said that. But no, when Search heard that and went back on to verify what he said, because I guess he was talking to Vlad, and what he actually said was, no, they had this guy, Larry Cohen, had put him on writing a verse for, and nobody knew. He was just told to write this verse. Search came to him, said that when Search heard that, he said, nah, what it was is that some executive had put him on trying to write a song for Rakim. And but when the guy came to Eric B and tried to let him hear it, he wasn't even trying to hear that shit. And he was like, nah, I ain't trying to hear that. I write my own shit. You know, either Eric B or Rakim said it. And said, no, I write my own shit, whatever. And that was it, you know what I'm saying? But but that song wound up becoming Step Into the AM. So
okay.
Right. So but he was like, Lord Sear, you fucking dick. He's like, I know you, and can't believe that you would you try and say it like that so that you could try and get some likes.
Yeah. You're talking about doing something for the clout like that, get a lot of hits. That's
what
was it? Clickbait. That's some serious clickbait right there.
Yeah, yeah. He just said that to get some, you know. Because you know, as soon as everybody hears, he's someone knocking Search out. Come on.
Like, yeah,
that's funny. Oh, what? He's like, yo, if that dude said that, I will knock Search the fuck out. That's hilarious. But yeah, that was side note right there. But yeah, so Doom came up through third base, and his connection was that he met them through a talent show.
Okay.
And yeah, so that's how he wound up getting on with them, and he came from a group, you know, his group had already been doing some shit, and basically, now. Do you know the story of Behind a Mask? Do you know when he started wearing a mask and why he started wearing it?
That was... The only thing I really know is after his brother died, and I don't know, stories kind of vary. Some say he was homeless, he went to Atlanta. But then when he re-entered the scene, he wore a mask and always wore a mask. He's like a new character. From what I can gather from like reading on the internet, it just seems like, you know, it was kind of like he was like a literal villain. Like he had sworn to take on the industry for what they had done to him, kind of like the comic book character. So he donned the Doom mask. But I don't, you know, that's as much as I know. It's not very detailed and doesn't really explain a whole lot.
But pre-Doom, he actually began freestyling incognito at open mic events at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe in Manhattan, obscuring his face by putting a woman's stocking over his head.
Ah, okay.
Right, and that was, I guess, that was during the time, you know, like right after his brother's death, and he was dropping a label, and then he finally started rhyming again.
He was dropped from the label. Did that have anything to do with the cover art to... what was the name of that CD? It was like their first, or maybe Black Bastards. That's the second KMD album. Do you remember it had like that, like Sambo character, and it was being hung?
Yeah. I can hear you. I remember that.
Yeah, because I remember there was some controversy over that album cover art. I don't remember if that was like the one of the reasons why they got dropped.
Nah, I tell you what happened, son. These horrible ass companies. What happened was, right before the Black Bastards album was scheduled to release, Sub Rock was killed while attempting to cross the 878 Nassau Expressway. Straight up. Elektra Records dropped KMD the same week. That same week they dropped them. Now, I'm not sure if one had to do with the other. I don't know. But Also, the album cover. Yep, you were right. The album cover was too provocative for Elektra management, who instructed Dante Ross to give the Black Bastards the heave ho. You know, gave him like 20 G's and gave him the heave ho off the label. And it was like the album was officially shelved, and then it wound up coming out later. I think it was Bobbito Garcia's label in 98 released it. Subverse, I think that's Subverse, is an underground hip hop label associated with Big Jew's company, Flow, Ruckus, all that. Anyway, they put it out. So, but, you know, also, you got to remember at the time, there was a lot of, you know, they were trying to bring the cute rappers out and all of this, you know, trying to have the girls buy the Write On magazines and the XXXLs. You know, you got to remember at the time it was. So there was all of this bullshit going on with, you know, trying to fit an image, and, you know, LL Cool J is about to drop and all of that. So, yeah, groups like that. Group out of Atlanta, what was the name?
Like Crisscross and stuff like that. Wow, these really, because I mean, those are guys were young too.
Before, when Jermaine Dupri discovered them walking through a mall, like, he said that all the girls was jocking. There was just like a crowd of people following them. And when he went up and asked them what they did, they was like, nothing, we just cool. So they kind of had like charisma about them or something. They had like a star power to them before they were even stars.
They were influencers.
But that's why I laughed.
Yeah, influence before they were was such a term. You know, they just,
right.
You know, you're right. Just walking through the mall, just had chicks. Just chicks was on them. They started their own little.
Chicks was buying them stuff.
Yeah, buying, you know, getting clothes and just doing their little thing. And next thing you know, yeah, so he went from being homeless, and that's why I believe he was obscuring his face when he first started doing his thing, because he didn't want anybody to judge him based off of who he was and recognize him and be like, what? You know, so Dumeal, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Yeah, Dumeal.
Yeah, so when he started, you know, getting back into it, getting back in the swing of things, that's kind of what it started being. But then, you know, he said himself that, you know, really the it was to take the face away from it, to have you listen to the music, really, to have you just, you know, focus on the music and not so much focus on the person behind the music. And then he started putting themes to that, you know, and different ways for that to come across. And so he started making these different characters. And, you know, Doom is only one character of many, you know what I'm saying? So that just happens to be, because then he has, like, Victor Vaughn, you know.
Yeah.
A bunch of other characters that, you know, we just haven't seen a lot of and actually have not seen manifested in you know, kind of in the flesh, you know, as they say. But, you know,
right.
We just basically see MF Doom, but that's because it's Doom's time right now. That's what he's said, is that, you know, it's just basically, you know, Doom's time to be in the spotlight. There will be probably become a time that, you know, he's not in the spotlight, and that it is some, you know, another character in his elaborate, long, big culture driven verse, you know, living hip hop, you know, literally. So telling a story, and it's that, which is some of the dopest hip hop in the world is telling stories, you know. Yeah, you know, it's Nas, Grandmaster Flash, and Furious Five. I mean, some of the, you know, with the message, I mean, some of the greatest expressions have been through hip hop to get enormous ideas across to a mass of people, which, you know, part of the reason they are so on us about conscious music, if you ask me. You know, that's why they always down. And
that term conscious is, you know, I don't even know what people mean by that anymore. conscious of what?
I think it's all political. I mean, a lot of these things are political. Having all these different subgenre names, you know, which kind of washes, yeah, you know, down the music. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, I only listen to psychedelic hip hop, hillbilly, you know, crime. Yeah. Like, what the hell? Oh, I only listen to, you know. So it's like when there's so many different subgenres, it waters down the intent of the musician, if you ask me. Just let people make music and listen to music. It doesn't have to be so genre centered. You know, when you listen to most people's playlist of the top 15 songs, most of them are probably not going to be in the same genre these days.
Nah. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever. But but yeah, so Doom is like just one of those enigmatic artists that just is able to mesh himself together with so many other artists, you know. And it's dope. I like how he does it with, like, when he did the album with Madlib, you know.
Mad Villainy.
Right, Mad Villain. That was a really dope album. But then, you know, his production skills, every time he gets with another producer, his production bumps up another level. It's like, he just goes in another direction, like, you know, and encompasses what that producer, you know, kind of does, and also adds more, you know. That food, I think, is another dope album, you know, with a lot of features.
Yeah, it's a concept album, and he manages to stay within the concept throughout the whole album.
Yeah, exactly. And that to me is just, you know, just the essence of Doom, being able to just stay within character, stay within his appointed, you know, storyline, and his use of like these random, seemingly random samples. I know that's got to be so difficult to find all this stuff to just fit your thing perfectly.
Well, even the way they get used, it was like the samples that he's using. It wasn't just the sample; it was the way that the sample was being used as well, the way it was being flipped, the time, or sequence.
Mm-hmm. The way he sequenced it,
it was different than, because like out of the songs that you can find that like he used a sample where somebody else used it, like it was in such a in an offbeat way, you know.
Yeah,
on a Doom track.
Yeah, definitely. And then that, what'd you think about the Sade album?
I didn't listen to it. I don't know if it's a mashup or not. It's not my style of album. I don't know. I never really listened to it.
Okay, that album has got a lot of hits on it though. I liked how he
I believe it.
Yeah, I like how we're actually gonna be listening to some of that today on today's show. There's really some dope, the way, like you were talking about cadence and the way he uses the those examples of that in a couple songs, like where he where you expect it to drop on the one and actually you're listening to like the third, you know, every third, it's dope. I like his definitely his concept.
Well, his flow, a lot of times his bars will bleed over into like the next bar, you know what I mean? It's not like his lines aren't really tidy, so they just kind of like flow into the next bar. It's kind of like, first listening, it's kind of hard to tell like where his bars are ending, his lines are ending. But his wordplay is clever, like, you know, the inside outside rhyme schemes, multiple rhymes, just, you know,
double entendres.
Yeah, like the way that like the last word in a line actually is the first word of the next bar. You know, he'll do a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's kind of like, you know, it kind of it's different, and you know, you have to go back and be like, wait a minute, what does that even mean? You know, trying to catch the references and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and then you listen back and you're like, oh, okay, I see what he's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Doom
stuff. Kind of like he's a I mean, you can really get like he's like one of them MCs where you can like really just sit there and dissect his rhymes. If you're into that type of thing, you know, or if you just like you're just bored or you're just lit and you're just like, you know, you can really get mental over his schemes.
Yeah, definitely. And he has a lot of features with so many different cats that he's able to flow it. So producer wise and
Mos Def quoted him as being his favorite artist. I mean, come on. His favorite MC actually.
What'd you say?
Mos Def said the MF Doom. Well, this is an older video, so I don't know who his favorite MC is now, but there's a old video where MF Doom is, I mean, not MF Doom, but Mos Def is talking about how his favorite MC is MF Doom, and he started like reciting some of his lines, like some of his favorite lines from Doom.
Nice, yeah.
It might still be on YouTube.
Yeah, it's dope. That's dope. Yeah, if I can find that, we're gonna listen to that. Doing.
Oh, also something you should throw in from the KMD days. Definitely should throw in is What a Nigga Know.
What a Nigga Know.
Remember that song?
I don't remember that.
You remember that song?
Out front. No, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, definitely throw that into the mix, though.
Definitely. Definitely. That's what's up. Man. What is your favorite Doom album? Or Doom mashup?
That's hard to say, man, because I'm kind of like, I don't know. And I've been, not the past couple of weeks. I've been listening to, I've been going back to Doom and listening. I have songs that I listen to, but as far as like a whole project, like songs that I probably like really like for one reason or another, but like as far as a whole project, it's hard for me to put like one project over another one because he has like, in my opinion, he has like so many great projects for one reason or another. You know what I mean? Like I like Accordion off of Matt Billney. You know, that's such a dope ass beat. But then also like Melanin off of not Melanin. Winter Blues off of JJ Doom. But it's not because I felt like it was lyrically his best. It was like that production. It was just like that deep bass line and just him repeating the word melanin over melanin. It was so catchy, but it wasn't for his lyrical prowess in that song. And then there was like some songs he did as King Ghidorah, that really, I can't think of the name of them right now, off of Operation Doomsday, I think it was. Was that it? No, it wasn't Operation Doomsday. It was, I want to say it was Monster Island SARS. But I wouldn't. I wouldn't even be able to name like a favorite project all over. Like the Vaudeville Villain, that was I like that CD a lot. But do I like it more than like, you know, Matt Villainy or Food or Danger Doom? I like all of them. I'm kind of like a almost an equal level for, you know, different creative reasons. So that's a hard one, bro.
To me, the Victor Vaughn album, Venomous Villain, is got to be one of his doper albums.
Venomous Villain is dope. And does that album have Mr. Clean on it?
Victor Vaughn, you know, and this is his second project as Victor Vaughn. And with the outside, and then there's a Diplo produced track on there called Back In, and Dope Skill, Dope Skiller. This production is Diplo is producing a track on there called Back In, and there's and Cool Keith and Doom go at it again on this one with the Optimus Prime and Megatron. Doom and Cool Keith go at each other on this one again on Dope Skiller. And this is actually a sequel to Vaudeville Villain. And then the album, the J.J. Doom album from 2012, that album right there.
Yeah, I got records. I definitely don't have a favorite MF Doom. I got some songs. I like songs, but as far as the whole project, I wouldn't be able to even categorize it in any type of order. But hey, do you remember Rock Cocaine Flow?
Rock Cocaine.
Yeah, it's a De La Soul song featuring MF Doom, and the beat gets faster. Like it'll speed up, like it'll start off slow, and then it'll just start speeding up until the end of the verse, and then it goes back to the original tempo. The next person will rhyme, and then as they're rhyming, it'll just speed up, and they'll do the same thing. It'll just go back to the original tempo.
Damn. That's why it's called Soul,
Rock Cocaine Flow, yeah. But it's like Rock Cocaine Flow. It's De La Soul featuring MF Doom.
Yeah.
Like the way the beat just sounded like an impossible beat to rhyme over, but they pull it off. Do you remember before Punk'd on MTV, there was a show, it was Red and Meth, where they was just like pranking cats. Do you remember that show? They had like two episodes or something like that. Like 1.5 episodes. Do you remember when they had Luda in the studio and they played that stupid ass Casio beat?
Oh yeah.
And then Luda was like, man, I don't know. I just can't catch the beat. And the Meth just comes in. He just starts, man, it's easy. It's just like da 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 da. It was some stupid ass beat with a crazy ass flow.
Oh yeah.
He started rhyming though, and he was like, all right, I could do it. And then he was like, you know what? Will it be dope if you ribbit it like a bullfrog? And he's on the track, like ribbiting. But if that beat was like that. I probably went too far into detail with that skit, but the beat was like that. But it was a funny skit. But the beat was like that. It was just crazy. But they killed it. They pulled it off. Definitely should check that out. Rock Cocaine Flow, De La Soul featuring MF Doom.
Okay, I did have to hear that flow, that song, because I remember the grind date. I remember the grind date.
Saying the producer's name, I'm over the track. Yeah, I said it. What you need to do is get back to reading credits. Read the medics alphabetically, stuck on that English shit. Now, but now, before we pour that sure shot, pour rock, okay, roll. From the top of the key for 3 villain. Been on in the game as long as he can really swing. Turn the corner spinning, bust that ass and get up. Dust off the mask,
Club Alaska, man. Doom is one of those cats. Yeah, no matter what Doom is on, bro, that guy's always gonna fucking come through with some shit, bro.
Yeah.
When he says, I got you on the... Oh, man. Let's find out, bro. I don't know, because it could have been fucking Doom. That guy's a dope producer. Let me see. Let's see who did the beat. But, yeah, which I think is incredible about him, too. He's good at flipping different styles and then making some really dope beats that come off like, oh damn, no. It's the fucking super producer, man. Jake One. God's a fucking beast.
Nice.
One, he's a fucking beast, bro.
Yeah. That beat was crazy. The fact that they attempted a rhyme over that, I'm just like, you guys are very fucking creative.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I definitely Doom. He says he's gonna do it, bro. Yeah, you just make the beat and let that guy go rip.
Yeah.
But yeah, Jake One is a beast, though, man. We gotta do a show on him too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so there's gonna be a good show as far as like the songs that's gonna be on the show today. Because
you got like a good range you can pick from, man.
Yeah, yeah, because guys got so many different, you know, features and different shit with different with everybody under the sun. And I like how, yeah, because he's got shit with Ghostface too. Oh yeah, he did that Scarface. That Scarface 20. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, and then the Danger Mouse, of course, has you know, we just dropped a couple songs on that last week, and which is what made us think about that. You know, it was like, oh shit, we just did that.
Right.
Why the freak? Why the not? So. And Operation Doomsday is, of course, another fucking.
Oh yeah, that's a dope-ass album for sure.
Yeah. Damn, I don't even know. I didn't even mention that in my fucking favorites. I don't know. But...
Oh, then you got to mention like Special Herbs, Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, like Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the dope thing about this guy, man. It's like, just from the beginning, he just thought it was going to be this one of those MCs from back in the 90s that you remember, and that was it. You know,
yeah.
The next thing you know, this guy just shows back up out of nowhere, and you know, and he starts dropping heat, man.
How many volumes is it in Special Herbs? I'm seeing 6 right now.
Special Herbs was volumes 1 and 2, but then Special Herbs the box set was 0 through 9. So that's
I remember that 10. Box set, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's worth a lot of money right now.
Right? Anybody can find that shit. Send it to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, good luck with that.
Hell yeah. Well, that came out in 06.
If somebody's in a given mood, if you want to donate like one of those Dilla vinyl figures to me, I'll gladly accept like a few hundred for those things.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I messed up because I had actually, I think I set a reminder on my phone the day it was supposed to go on sale, and I could have cop one, but I think I got busy. I was at work. It was like some weird day. I got called in on work or something and came home. It was sold out. And then when I checked the eBay sites, it was, I think, like, it was already like a couple of hundred each. And now I don't know what they are, but I need one.
Yeah, right? Don't we all? Shit. But you know Doom's always going by Metal Fingers as right. Steven as his MF. Producer name too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the MF comes from.
Yeah. Right. But and Sub Rock, of course. Died in 93 right. At age 19.
Right.
But and you're right that they were dropped from Elektra because of the album cover of the Sambo.
Yeah, it was like a controversial thing. I'm not gonna remember.
Yeah, I do. I remember that. I remember them going through a bunch of. A bunch of stuff that during that time, and that was like yeah, we were right about the year. It was like 93. Yeah. That was a big.
That was. I remember when Peach Buzz hit. It was a hip hop was varied. It was like really varied at that time. Yeah, everything commingling with everything. There was like even. House music and hip hop at that time kind of habitated some of the same spaces. You know what I mean? Like cohabitate, I should say. It was just an eclectic, creative period in hip hop at that time. Because, I mean, you got like Ice Cube, and then like you'll have like Third Base, and then you'll have like X-Clan, and then, you know, Tribe Called Quest, and you know, it was nothing wrong if you had all these things on your playlist. Except for maybe their base, I think, was kind of polarizing. So maybe not so much them. But, like, you know, when I was in school and they came out, it was kind of polarizing. Either people messed with them or they didn't. And if they didn't listen to them, and you were listening to them, people would be like, why are you listening to Third Base? You know?
Right. Yeah. Which is crazy. Because, yeah, I mean, for me, I was down with a crew. And our crew had, like, every race represented. Yeah, you know, except for Asian. I mean, you know, we had everything else. We had Spanish, Black, White. Actually, we did have Asian because we had Hawaiian. And so he's part Asian.
Wait, that's like Pacific Islander, though, right?
Pacific Islander, yeah.
Because I don't think they consider themselves Asian.
Depends on where you're from. Because I mean, some of them have Japanese. There's a large Japanese culture. Anyway, so growing up, they were always, you know, I always got to see that element of it. Like, oh, y'all different color, y'all doing hip hop. It's like, bro, you know, different color doing hip hop since the inception of hip hop.
Right.
Like. And you get over that shit. Like,
I think that was like kind of a. I feel like that's like an outside of New York type thing. Now, I've never been to New York, but from all the footage I've seen of like hip hop early years in New York, it was always like the neighborhoods were always. It was like everybody was participating. You had the Spanish kids and the Latin kids and the Black kids and the Dominicans, the Puerto Ricans, and it was like everybody was like celebrating hip hop. That's why I never understood why people were kind of like, well, it's a Black thing. It was like a racial thing. And to me, what it appeared to be was like an inner city thing. Not necessarily true. Like applied to any type of race. Like it was just like Black people that was doing it, you know. It was just like people who lived in the inner city and didn't really have much, you know. They have instruments, make music, and, you know, did hip hop. You express yourself through b-boying and beatboxing and rapping and, you know, beat making.
Right. But some people just put this whole identity thing behind it because they were maybe so things are more segregated.
Wherever they were at, like because of their like their environment.
Yeah, well, a lot of areas are, you know, pretty segregated. Like people will live in their own areas or schools or go to their own church, whatever.
Yeah.
They'll be integrated at one level, but you know, still within there, they may go to the same school, but then they hang out with the same people that they feel comfortable with or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, so they always people of all races have always been involved with hip hop, and it's just been a melting pot of hip hop. Actually, yeah, it's gotten just to this level. I mean, when DMC and all those dudes were going around for the first time. You know, and meeting people in China and meeting people in, you know, London and all over, and they were getting exposed to it. When they left, you know, Public Enemy came. After they left, you know, they still were getting Schoolie D's and everybody else that was still going through and going to these hip hop clubs. And, you know, so they've always been exposed at some level to hip hop and accepted it wholeheartedly. That's why they're in a different way than we are, because the radio didn't necessarily control what they listened to as much as we did. Where they were, they had to actually go and seek out hip hop to listen to it. So what they listened to was the raw uncut versions typically, and if they get their hands on that, you know, tapes and records and whatever else. So they saw the five elements more clearly than we did when we were being, you know, shown all these different other elements, which, you know, it was just a different way of presenting it, I guess, to us, because we were here in the States and we're being, you know, pretty much railroaded into listening to a 90-minute tape every day, all day.
Yeah.
You know, so it definitely has an effect. So, 25 years later, we're looking and seeing, like, what that effect
is done. Well, have you seen some of these Asian, I want to say they're either like Chinese or Korean like hip hop groups, but it's like kind of like it's kind of like a hip hop K-pop group. You know what I mean? It's like hip hop, but like a pop version, an Asian pop version of a hip hop group is a trip.
Of a hip hop group, like who?
I don't know their names. I'm talking about like these are, like I'll just come across some like online every once in a while about like Chinese hip hop group or Korean hip hop group or something. You know what I mean? But then you look at them, they just look like a pop hip hop group. You know what I'm saying? Like the way they style their hair, the way they dress, the way they move. You know their the way they dance. You know, like their dance steps and everything. It's like,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like how they interpret hip hop, you know, which is cool. I mean, it's there for you to do that, but it's just like that's where we're at with hip hop worldwide now, you know. And you still get like political hip hop from like these Africans in France, and you know, what I'm saying just wherever, the UK, they had their own style. Like I liked when the UK was doing when they were like double timing their rhymes over like these grime beats. It was like it was rapping, right. Just like over these crazy fast beats, and still keeping time. But they was like, you know, supposedly freestyling. I'm like, yeah, that's incredible, bro.
Yeah, yeah, I remember some of those gram tapes and all that back in the day when it first started, and they really just kept it up. And then the drill music and all this other stuff came too.
Yeah,
but I think it's all been pretty positive though. I mean, I think that there's too much repetition and too much of the same thing a lot of times. You know,
that's what any art form though. I think
when they started saying lanes, to me that lane thing is just kind of lame. By saying, oh, I'm in a lane, that's like, no, you're copying. You're doing something the same thing as somebody else. Do something different.
Right.
You know, go out, you know, Outkast wasn't trying to do the same thing as everybody else when they came out, you know.
Yeah, that was a real organic movement too, because all those dudes kicked it, like the Dungeon Family. They all was just like kicking in this basement, like just vibing, smoking, and you know, creating music.
Yeah, you know, keeping it real organic the way it really should be.
Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't come out that way for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, are you eating a sandwich right now?
I had to check my roast.
Okay. Sound like you're checking a whole lot of it, though.
Sorry, it was one bite.
It's good.
It came out good.
Yeah, obviously. You can tell. All
right. Anyway, so they, because you have this Korean beef. Well, I have this Korean seasoning that I use it on a roast.
Okay. What's it called? What's the seasoning called?
It's called Golden Mountain Cooking Sauce.
Okay.
What is it? It's Golden Mountain cooking sauce. it's like a, have you ever been to like a Japanese, they have this sauce that they give you. It's part of the, like one of the sauces that they put out.
Okay.
And it's that.
Okay.
It's that. It's like a soy sauce. It's kind of salty, like a soy sauce. Like what has a teriyaki kind of after to it or something. It's,
I might know what you're talking definitely about.
Yeah. If you ever been to a steakhouse, this is that. Anyway, so that's our food segment for the day. gotta eat though, man. I had some, earlier, I did some Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
Man, you mess with the Brussels sprouts?
I tried to cook them before, and I think I got the butter too hot. The temperature was too hot on the butter, so when it soaked into the Brussels sprout, you could taste like the burntness of the butter. You know what I mean? But then I've had Brussels sprouts somebody else cook, and they were like perfect. And I was like, yeah, they're cold when you cook them right. I just didn't cook them. I didn't cook them right, but you know. But every once in a while, I mess with Brussels sprouts. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was really do. I like to leave them in there and let them roast, really, really roast. And then today I had some Munster.
Mm-hmm. Cheese, right?
So I threw some, yeah. So after, because normally I do like a Parmesan on it or something.
Wow.
This time I just put some Munster on it after. I put some Munster and some pepperoni on it. And roasted it with that. After we were done, I roasted that, and came out good.
Yeah, that sounds like it would. Because then it's just soaking up like that pepperoni grease, and you know, you get all that flavoring in there. Can't go wrong with that,
right?
Unless you got high blood
pressure. Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. Well, that's why I try not to go. Butter, I use olive oil.
Yeah.
I started trying to use a lot of olive oil on a lot of stuff these days, like, and just fresh veggies, and just use a little bit, because we're going with that keto.
Oh, you're doing the keto?
Keto diet.
Bro, I heard that, like, when you first, I guess it's like an adjustment period, like first few days or so, where you just have no energy. But after that, it's like all good. But just getting through those first few days,
yeah.
And I can't do keto because I love rice too much, man.
Right.
I gotta have rice. Right.
I'm making rice for the kids tonight because I'm letting them eat rice.
Hey, how often do you eat rice, bro?
I used to eat it all the damn time,
like every day, like daily.
Yeah, like that or pasta or something all the time, man. Okay.
Now, it was because it's this thing where people are kind of like, they think it's an Asian thing. You know what I mean? I'm like, you know, it's particularly like Black people approach me on this and just be like, well, what starches do you eat? I mean, granted, yeah, you're probably going to have like some pasta some nights, maybe like potato cooked, like however baked or fried or whatever. But for the most part, I felt like, you know, rice is like, even when I was in the South, like, shit, we would eat rice for breakfast sometimes. You didn't have no grits, then you just cook some rice, put some butter and sugar on top of that, and, you know, you go to town with that with, like, some bacon and eggs, whatever, biscuit. So I'm always, like, trying to tell people, like, bro, the reason rice is here in America is because of the slaves. When they was bringing the slaves over here, like, a lot of times women were sowing rice into their hair, and they got out here, they took the rice. It was planted and it was growing it. And that's what the slaves were eating. They was growing their own rice. And the slave masters was looking like, well, what is that? And they was telling them. So they taught the slave masters how to grow and cook rice. That's originally how I got to the United States. And it's documented. I saw this on a documentary, a PBS documentary. It was talking about the history of slavery and the show itself, It talked about the lives of some, like, the first 50 slaves or first 25. So I forgot how many slaves. But it talked about their lives and their descendants and, you know, what they went through.
Wow.
I can't remember the name of the documentary because I wiped out my old hard drive like a dumbass. So I have lost a bunch of great documentaries that I probably will never find again.
Sucks.
But it was an old PBS series. It was like a documentary series, but like a bunch of like feature length episodes. Like each episode was like 2 hours long or so. And it was a number of them, and it just talked about like the history of the first 50 slaves or so, like from their names, their lineage, and everything, like what they went through all like the documents that they could find, like, you know, the paperwork they could find on them. Very interesting.
Wow. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, if I can remember the name, maybe I can point you in the right direction.
Oh, you said PBS.
It was PBS, so. Yeah. But they got a number. They got a number of documentaries on like slavery that time in America. You know what I mean?
Right.
They had a good one on Jack Johnson too. I think it was a two-parter. It was a real good documentary.
I may have seen part of that.
Yeah, possibly. But there's been a couple of documentaries about Jack Johnson, but PBS was I like theirs too. They had a good one.
Huh. I have to check that out. But yeah, so it's crazy how the we always go a million different directions, but we always can make it back. Yeah. Back to the music. And that's crazy because back then, you know, like during the time of early music, you know, and rhythm and blues and everything, that's kind of what led us to hip hop in the first place. Was like music from back in the 1900s.
Oh, yeah.
And slavery, you know, and slave music, the slaves singing spirituals and singing old music coming across on the ships, you know, coming here. And it's crazy how that's, it's not crazy, but it's amazing how that translated over to gospel music. When gospel music translated over to bebop and ragtime and jazz music, R&B, hip hop, and everything else now.
Yeah, if you read the book "Go Ahead in the Rain," was it by Hanif? I can't pronounce his last name. Hanif Abdurraqib. It's on the cover. It says it is a love letter to a group, a sound in the era. It's called "Go Ahead in the Rain." It's called. Hold on, I can't see the whole cover. But if you read that book, in the very beginning of the book, he ties all that up. Like very eloquently, like how like these the songs that the slaves were singing turned and later became like hymns and later became you know, blues and then jazz and then, you know, rock and R&B. He traces the whole lineage of hip hop all the way back to slavery. And I think it was like the first chapter or two of that book. He does a really good job of it. That's a really good book. I suggest anybody if you're interested in hip hop, you don't even have to, you know, especially A Tribe Called Quest, definitely read that book. But that's how the book starts off. But it's called "Go Ahead in the Rain: Notes to a Tribe Called Quest." I highly suggest everybody out there read that book.
Yeah, so and it goes over the whole lineage of music and how, yeah, where music came from and how it got to where it is now.
Yeah, in the first chapter, he'll go back in the history. And they kind of bring you like forward to when he first discovered A Tribe Called Quest. And this is like within the first chapter. I think by the second chapter, he's already talking about how he discovered like Tribe Called Quest. But before that, he's talking about his upbringing, how his dad was like a jazz saxophonist, maybe. I think he was a trumpet section. I can't remember if it was like a saxophonist. But and then how he, you know, his relationship with his brother and how he tried to play jazz. And then, you know, he tried to get into the school jazz band, and then like he discovered Tribe Called Quest. And then it wasn't just like him rehashing memories while, like, you know, like while Tribe is like the soundtrack to his life. It's like he starts speaking on, like, you know, Q-Tip and Fife's relationship and Fife's personality and how, you know, it's like it goes deep. It's a really good a really good read, man. Like he's a really good writer, in my opinion.
Nice. We should definitely check that out. So, yeah, it's, as a matter of fact, on this show, I mean, that's one thing that we definitely want to let everybody know is that we're here to fortify and help, you know, continue the legacy of culture and minority music and urban music. And creative power, you know, and just people power, music power, and power of creating relationships with everyone, and power of music itself. So that's what the show is all about. It's trying to bring people of all races, creeds, and colors together under the banner of music, and, you know, and let the music speak for itself and let the people have the power to speak to each other through music. And, you know, which is a problem sometimes because I feel that music has been, you know, directed by others that are not creating the music to, you know, to speak to us in different ways. And there's too much there's not enough creative control. And what we hear is what they want us to hear. It's like, you know, there's too many songs about, you know, crazy drugs. There's too many songs about,
yeah,
calling about violence. There's too many things of this nature that definitely, if we're seeing it pop up in our culture, we're seeing more of these things happen, there has to be some reason that that's happening. And we have to take, you know, full, you know, survey and evaluation of what our is, you know, good and bad, you know, and be able to speak up and say what's right and what's wrong, and, you know, people to understand that that's where we're coming from with it. It's not a thing of, you know, what they're saying needs to be governed, but it needs to be considered by each individual who says or states anything, what the outcome would be, what the outcome should be, and where we should be going. So, I mean, that's my little editorial for the day.
You're allowed that.
So, man, if you ask me, I think Doom has got to be mentioned if you're talking about, like, hip-hop, like, rapper/producers. I mean, that when you start talking about really good hip-hop/producers, rapper/producers, his name, you know, definitely bubbles up towards the top, you know?
Right.
I mean, if you put together 10 dudes and said, you know, top 10 who produce and write, shit. I mean, the list gets short really quick. You know,
there's some
Kanye.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Kanye. There's some notable names in that list.
Yeah, some notable names on that list. Kanye's on that list, definitely. You know, J. Cole's on that list, definitely.
I forgot he writes his and produces his own stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but then there's cats like Odyssey produces and writes his own stuff.
You got Madlib.
Huh?
Madlib,
yep. Madlib. You know? Let's see. Right. Oh, KRS used to do his own beats, but
what about Jay Electronica? Was he producing his own stuff?
Yeah, Jay Electronica. Jay Electronica does do beats. Yes, but I couldn't call out like some of the tracks that he's done. I could not call him out. I could tell you, but Jay Dilla.
Oh yeah, of course, Dilla.
I mean, there's guys that'll be on the list. Some guys will just be on the list. You know, it's not necessarily top 10. But, I mean, yeah, but don't jam. Like, Electronic is dope as fuck, though, so.
Yeah. Well, I know he, he took that, what is it, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind? Is that what it's called? That movie?
Yeah.
He took the theme music from that and looped it in one of his songs. He references it in his rhyme. I forgot the name of it.
Oh.
But I don't know. Like, all right, so I don't know to what depth of a producer he is. I don't know if he would just loop some stuff, like sample something and just loop it, or if he was like a producer, you know what I'm saying? Like, he really made, you know, beats.
Right. That's
a lot of
and that's kind of where I was.
See, we gotta do a show about like Jay Electronica, because he was doing this whole weird, like he was a dope ass MC that was like acting like a MySpace rapper when I first discovered him. I'm like, why is this? Like, it sounds like he's making music in his bedroom, but obviously he's too good to be doing that. But why is he doing it? And he's releasing on MySpace on like 100 different pages.
Right.
he's an oddity. And they're like, now what happened to him? Like, where is he at? Where's the album at, Jay? Like, come on, man.
Yeah. Baby mama is Erykah Badu.
Well, yeah, if you're a dope rapper, Erykah Badu, I think, you know, she'll date you. She got a kid by DOC. She has a kid by, did she have a kid by Common? I don't think she had a kid by Common, no. But she has a kid. Yeah, she has a kid by Andre 3000, and then she has a kid by Jay Electronica.
Mm-hmm. It just so happens. If she wasn't known, and we just knew a girl who had three kids by three of them guys, it is what it is, you know?
But I ain't saying that, but what I'm saying is she just has, like, kids by three different dope rappers, and she's a dope musician herself. She DJs, she sings, she rhymes, she's a doula. You know what I'm saying? I ain't knocking her at all. I'm just saying, like, that's that hell of a household right there, though.
I was saying that, yeah, Jay Electronic is a dope MC, but like the top 10, like, you know, because if we're talking about like really dope skills on both sides of the equator,
yeah,
it gets thin because we don't know what his skill set is with that, really. But like, right. Because you can't even put Flying Lotus in that category because he don't rhyme. Right. Like, there's so many dope cats that are just like on one side or the other, you know. But like, damn. All right, we initially named what, like four or five. But it kind of gets real thin after those four or five.
Yeah.
Like
we're talking about like really... people who are dope.
Killer J.
That do both and are dope. Because usually it's like people who do that, they're better at one than the other, and they should probably stick to the one that they're good at. Like, maybe they're better at making a beat, not so much as rhyming. So maybe you should just stick to producing, or vice versa.
Right. But yeah, when it comes to it, but yeah, that's why I say, like, MF Doom, that guy is, like, gotta be up there in the top five. I mean,
well, definitely. The rhyme scheme. Yeah. At one point in like in the early 2000s, he was probably like your favorite MC's favorite MC.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, One Beer, yeah, that's a dope ass track.
You guys just been knocking out heads upon heads. But yo, it's almost that time, man. It's about time to go, bro. I'm down to like 1%. You wanna go ahead and say your shouts out and see what's up to anybody?
Shout out to Harmonic Brewing in San Francisco for keeping me inebriated after work.
Right. Shout out to Lagunitas. Fuck it.
Lagunitas.
Shout out to.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Shout out. Shout out to Maple Tree Extracts for their Cherry Gorilla. Man, this shit is dope. It keeps you just right. Thanks, Maple Tree. Definitely. So, shout out to check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Google Podcasts. Check us out on Mixcloud Mondays. That drops on Monday at Mixcloud. Look at Till the Tape Pops, Hip Hop 01. Check us out. And, yeah, that's it for the week. And we got some new stuff coming up. We got a fashion report we're going to be doing with one of our boys. Wow. Yeah, that's coming up. That's next week, bro. We got a jingle and everything, bro.
You got a jingle. That's funny. Is it Fashion Fridays?
Yeah. Fashion Fridays. I love it.
We need to trademark Mixtape Mondays and Fashion Fridays. Like how LeBron tried to trademark Taco Tuesdays.
right. We'd have to do the podcast on Fridays, though. You want to start doing it on Fridays? It don't matter right now.
Yeah, Fridays is no bueno for me. I work Fridays.
I mean, no, we could drop it any day as long as, you know, we just know ahead of time we have everything done. So, like,
I can record at the bar after work on Fridays.
Hell yeah.
I'm ass drunk. Nah, you don't know what that is. And nothing coherent will come out my mouth.
All right, well, let's try it. Let's try at least one and see how that goes. You know, who knows?
Okay, well, yeah, because it's a lively bunch in that bar.
Yeah, cool. That's good. I mean, we want to do some live out, you know, talking to some people. I mean, you might even talk to some people, record some shit. You know,
well, you've seen that business card. Did you see the business card I texted you?
Yeah.
Those dudes are from L.A. because they was out here watching Dodgers versus Giants. I'm down the street from the Giants stadium. So they was out here. We was just talking. I don't even know how we started talking. We was just talking. They was like, "Yeah, we from LA." And I was like, "Oh yeah, cool. That's what's up. We're trying to do this hip hop thing." And he was like, "Oh, I DJ too. Here's my card. You know, if you ever come out to LA, you want to throw a party, just hit, give me a call. You can hire us." So I'm like, "Oh, all right."
That's what's up.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, bro! About to do that shit. Sit with these motherfuckers.
Yeah, they was all in Dodger gear, and he's like, "Yeah, we gonna get you some Dodger gear." I was like, "Yeah, nah, I don't think that's gonna happen, man." And then against the Dodgers, I'm just saying, I don't think I'm gonna be wearing that out here.
Hey, get shot out there.
Hell, if I go to a Giants game, I'm wearing the A's jersey, so it's just
yeah. I can still keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That nigga's the Giants, I'm just saying. I'm representing my side of Bay. But it's all good. It's all good. I love the Bay in its entirety.
Yeah, definitely. Well, cool, man. It's good talking to you, man. And we're going to check out the Mixcloud Mondays. We are doing a show on MF Doom. And,
all caps when you spell the man name.
Yeah, it's all caps, bitches. And we'll see y'all next week. One love, grease, and hair, peace. You know what I'm saying? That's it. Peace and hair. Grease and hair, peace.
No peasy hair pieces.
One love. Yeah, right. One love, peace, and soul.
See, this is how I know you've been smoking, because you always get stuck on this part.
Right. That's what you know. Yeah, that's when you know the weed is good. All right, motherfuckers. Next week. All right.